Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. And we're back again after a big old week and weekend of rugby action, and we've got the Six Nations Round 3 to look ahead to as well. Thank you very much for listening. How are you doing, Phil?
Hello, Tim. Very well, thank you.
Your beard is getting to Charlie Manson proportions, I've got to say.
It's getting ridiculous. It will be coming off soon. It will be coming off like JB's hair has come off. It's looking streamlined.
Yeah.
Very fast at the moment, very fast. Yeah. You look a bit like Teen Wolf.
Well, I've always had the Michael J. Fox vibes going on.
Yeah. Well, thank you very much. Oh, JB, hello.
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 I was going to say, do you know what my wife told me yesterday?
What?
It made me think of you. She said, do you think the moon landing's happened?
Why did you say that?
I can't remember why. But then I probed a little deeper and she's like, no, I don't think that they happened.
No,
people in work have been talking. I was wondering, have you been talking to her?
To be clear, the moon landing's 100% happened.
100%?
I also think that they filmed and photographed some of the stuff as well.
To make it look better.
To make it look better.
Some promo shots.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely.
Like when you have the Six Nations promo and they're all wearing trainers, you know that's faked.
Yeah, that is faked, isn't it? Those ones shot in action, in anger.
Exactly, those are fake. They're like the moon landing shots.
Well, yeah. Okay, so all the basics, I've forgotten how to do this job. So, yes, we're at Rugby Podcast on Twitter. He's at Jay Beardmore. I'm at Cocker. Phil is lurking in your DMs. You can support us on Patreon, and thank you to the people that do. We'll have to decide another jersey that we're going to give away for...
Oh, Christ, I've not sent it. It's there.
It's okay. We'll take care of that. No, but we'll have to decide another jersey. Yeah, so we're giving away shirts from the dungeon on regular intervals to people that support us on Patreon, because we need to just make a bit of space for new ones, to be honest.
Exactly right.
And also, we want to share the love and share the joy. I'm wondering at what point. We'll decide on one. I mean, I keep looking at that Dylan Hartley England jersey.
No,
the Chris Robshaw England jersey is like an amazing price for a Welsh fan or an Australian fan.
But the Dylan Hartley one, it is signed an autograph to us, the three of us specifically.
Well, we'll get back to you on this. We'll get back to you on this. But you can support us on Patreon, and we're very, very grateful for those that do. Patreon.com/eggchasers. Right, well, domestic rugby to kick off on this podcast. Should we start with You Are the Ref? A quick You Are the Ref segment.
Go on.
Because it rained cards this weekend.
It certainly did. There's five red cards and multiple other yellow cards.
Yeah,
there were a lot of cards. Amazingly, for five red cards, I don't think it affected the rugby. Just by pure luck, no one actually got particularly ill-served by them.
No, which...
That's a fair comment.
I would agree with that, and that does go to something that I've said for a long period of time, actually, that the cards actually impact the rugby less than a lot of people want to believe. Mm. Indeed, it's a bad example, very, very small example, but in the London Irish-Bristol game, Bristol have Bedloe, yellow carded for 10 minutes. During that 10 minutes, Bristol scored two tries. That was actually their most effective period of the whole game.
They would have been wishing he got a red card, which you would argue he should have done.
Yeah.
Who was commentating that game?
Ugo and Ben Kay with
Nick Mullins.
Yes. Yeah. So Ugo it was said something really interesting, which is when somebody goes off, I think I'd know if it's Ugo, but it must have been Ugo because this is his job. When someone goes off, the best way to defend is to increase your line speed.
Yeah, I thought that was a really interesting comment.
Yeah.
Because it kind of twigged something in my brain as well, because I was like, that is interesting, because it's almost like rolling the dice. Yeah. Like, if you increase your line speed, then if you either hit people behind the gain line, that there's good gains there, but if you get two intercepts like Bristol did, there's huge gains there, but you're rolling the dice because you're going to miss more tackles, and once a team with more men has breached your line, you are likely to concede more. So it seems like a high risk, but also potentially, certainly on this evidence, high reward strategy.
You'd almost think the logic would be, all right, we're down a man, so we're going to use the touchline as our extra defender.
Sit back and just absorb, rather than try and pressure them.
I like that. And then I thought, well, why don't we just do this all the time? And then it came back to my old mantra, which is, being a defence coach is easy, isn't it? Because what do you need? More line speed, more
line speed. Yeah.
Go get me some Wolves. Go get the Wolves.
Everyone was going on about how Sean Edwards' French is that much better. He only has to learn two words.
Yeah, exactly. Line speed. Easy.
I think we've done this before. I'm going to get the translator up.
Oh, yes, we have. We have.
I think it might even be lean speed. Simple as that. Translate. Sorry, this is riveting programming. Hold on. Line speed. Let's see. What do you... Oh, yeah. Vitesse de la ligne. There we go. That's all you have to learn. If you want to be a defence coach...
In France,
then it's as simple as...
Vitesse de la ligne.
There you go.
Perfect.
And that sounds so aggressive.
There you go. Done. Sorted. Get your CVs updated.
Needs to be more northern, I think.
That's a good point. It's a very good point. Do you want to do an impression of a northerner saying Vitesse de la ligne, Phil?
Vitesse de la ligne.
Oh, that, wow.
Good, mate.
Christ,
get off that sofa, JB, and hit some walls.
Exactly. That's exactly what I should be doing.
All right. Okay, right. Let's have a little Ask the Ref segment then, because crazy amount of cards in the Premiership this weekend.
Yeah. Yeah, that sounds good to me.
So what are we saying then?
There are some which are clear reds. That's obvious. Kieran Brooks is a clear red. Do you agree?
I would agree. I think we can do this quite simply by saying three of them are definitely clear reds, because three of them are near identical.
Yeah.
The Visa, the Kieran Brooks, and the Mike Williams are all no arms tackle or ruck clear outs, where there's either a chicken wing or a slingshot position for the arm, shoulder to the head, red card.
Yeah, I agree with that. The Lieben Hangberg, or whatever his name is.
Lieben Hangbird.
Yep. He is definitely a red. I don't think there's any doubt about that one.
That's an interesting one.
Oh, yeah. I was going to say, I think we should separate very briefly. I'll go with where Phil was. We should. Jasper Visa, Kieran Brooks,
Mike Williams.
The three of those are very similar. And one thing I remember from that Jared Payne. That's, it feels like a long time ago.
That's a dark day in our proud history.
That Jared Payne red card for Ulster. We must be talking like, was that Alex Good?
It was about 2014, I think.
Was that Alex Good?
It was good.
Yeah,
it was maybe good. Maybe 2014.
Yeah, we're talking 14, a long time.
Yeah, 7 years ago.
That does seem a long time ago now. In the early days of the pod. And I remember one of the things you said then, which has always stuck with me, Phil, was coaching points. And I think you can say it's a clear yellow or red card when there are... when there is a clear coaching point to come out of it. And the coaching point out of this for Jasper Visa, for Mike Williams, for Kieran Brooks is go a bit lower and attempt to wrap. And it might both of those things might mitigate.
Yeah. If you attempt to wrap, even if you hit the head, you're starting a yellow card likely. Mm. And it's, I remember making that exact point. It's 4 years ago. 4 years ago now, with Sonny Bill Williams on Anthony Watson for the Lions, where he shoulder charged, he gets a red card in the test that the Lions won, and that was a clear coaching point. And it should be in my mind that chicken wing or slingshot position should be totally alien to a rugby union player. I can kind of understand why it is a little bit to a rugby league player, because historically that was allowed, but that's never been allowed in rugby for you to do that.
And now, boys, I don't want you to go wild on this, but I was talking to a current member of the England squad.
How was he doing anyway?
He's all right, yeah. He's all right.
Good.
How do you know it was a he?
Exactly.
Because
the Roses aren't playing.
Oh, yes.
I knew
they have the elite squad.
No, I don't think they're even in their bubble, are they?
They're not in their bubble.
But I don't even think they're able to do the bubble.
They don't have a bubble, but like the England men's squad, you have the elite squad kind of constant, fair. People coming in and out.
Shows both of our bigotry.
Speaking of rugby league, whenever bubbling gets mentioned, it always makes you think about that Australian rugby league player on Mad Monday.
Do you know all the lads are stuck, as I understand it, or at least were, maybe they've got a few days off, but they're basically stuck in that bubble for the duration of Six Nations.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mental.
I think that was the reason Joe Marler didn't want to do it.
Well, don't blame him. I wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Well, I mean,
I might do it.
Of course, I would.
Yeah.
To play for my country and to...
The money is quite good as well, isn't it?
To earn $125,000 plus all the extra stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd take it.
Yeah, so anyway, we were discussing the chicken wing and we couldn't really understand the standard, because the chicken wing itself, there are lots of examples of people going into rucks and people say, oh, not raise their arms. And in that scenario, I don't really see why a arm to the face is much more comfortable than a pointed shoulder to the face. In fact, I don't think it is.
Yeah, I'd say a proper shoulder charge, like an old school rugby league shoulder charge, is definitely more painful. Having been on the receiving end as a young man of a rugby league style shoulder charge,
yes,
it is like being hit by a train.
But to be fair, yeah, I can describe. So these are the sort of details you don't get from other rugby podcasts who have not played since their age 15. Or in fact, might not have even played a man's game from what I understand. I have been shoulder charged, and the guy didn't shoulder charge me. He just stood his ground, and it's like running into a tree.
Yeah.
It is uncomfortable, but I think that is different, you know, from sort of the arm tuck. Yeah, almost as if you are bracing, you know. You can get caught in a situation where you really didn't want to make this contact, you're in a bad situation, and you can tuck the arm, sort of protect yourself.
I do have sympathy, and we've seen this one before. I do have sympathy for Kieran Brooks in as much as there's nowhere for his arm to go.
There isn't, is there?
And almost, you know, if you apply the coaching point, which is make sure you make an attempt to wrap anyway, what we might end up, one of the unintended consequences might be a lot more players popping out their shoulder joint. by double tackling with one of their own teammates and their shoulder being left behind them.
There was something about this which really struck a chord with me. I can't remember where I've heard this story, whether it's an amateur game or a pro game. I'm sure it's an amateur game. And do you know when you think about things, you think, God, was I dreaming this bit of information or did this actually happen? But I'm sure I've met a guy who had to quit because he made a double tackle. And he makes a tackle, much like Kieran Brooks, in the Kieran Brooks situation. But he actually managed to wrap his arm. And then as his mates come in, he's broken his arm.
Oof. And I could see that happening.
Oh, 100%. I mean,
it would be a bit of a freak injury.
I don't know. Would it?
Well, players are supposed to tackle like that all the time. There's probably 100 double tackles a game.
Yeah.
When was the last time you've seen it happen?
But isn't the case more to do with the fact it hits a head? And this is my...
Yes.
Yeah, this is where I'm going to go next with this.
Which is exactly what I was going to say. I would be a little bit more lenient in general in the ones where there's nowhere for the arm to go and it ends up in a chicken wing position as a result. I think you could almost go, oh, do you know what, we'll just let that play on because it wasn't a shoulder charge. There's nowhere for his arm to go. However, Kieran Brooks makes the mistake of doing that at the same time that he's also high.
Yeah.
Yeah, although in the Kieran Brooks one, there could have been a mitigating factor because Lavanini's height drops.
True.
Just before, so
true.
You could actually see that. I think applying World Rugby Framework, you could actually get that to a yellow. Mm. I'm not saying I particularly like that, just because, as I said before, I think it should be totally alien, that chicken wing stance. But
and I would
you could get there.
I would argue something else as well. I know I'm really confusing all the matters here. We have 5 red cards. I would argue it should have been 6 red cards because Bath should have received a double red card for their efforts.
For the
maybe 7 because Jean-Luc Dupree maybe should have got a red
absolutely
card.
Absolutely not. What he did. We'll talk about that in a minute because that is wrong.
And maybe Sam Bedford should have got one for
Bedlow. Bedlow, yeah. Sorry. Well, certainly the BT Sport commentators, all of them were gunning for that to be a red card. Which
Get him!
I do slightly disagree with that.
Yeah, no, I think I do.
I think Carl Dixon handled that expertly, actually. Yeah. I thought they did a good job, a really good job on that in difficult circumstances.
The one from the Leicester game that I'm very sympathetic towards is Hamro Liebenberg.
Yeah,
because I was interested that you said, oh, it's definitely a red. 100%.
Definitely red. I can't see anything else other than a red.
I'd pick up on this. The one thing, as I said, is when there's a coaching point, you can sort of go, yeah, clear red. Kieran Brooks should have gone lower. He should have wrapped his arm. Fine. Same with Jasper Visa. Unnecessarily high and no need to have the shoulder to the head. And Mike Williams didn't need to have the chicken wing and could have been lower. I don't know what Hamro Liebenberg does differently. I don't know what a coach could say to him tomorrow morning and say. Let's go through that incident. This is what you should have done.
Well, let me just add something to that point, because in discussing that, the TMO said that Liebenberg was in no position to catch the ball. Now, I would actually argue that Josh Bassett was also in no position to catch the ball, and that wasn't discussed at all.
Mm.
Josh Bassett was a good couple of feet under that ball. He was nowhere near being able to catch it, which begs the question, if you extrapolate that exact point, every time a ball is kicked, no matter whether you're in 50 yards of that ball, jump into the air near an opposition player, land on your head, red card. Because there should be... You can't just apply... That player needs to be close to the ball.
There's the coaching point. Well, yeah, jump in the air more.
You can't just apply... The only one player needs to be close to the needs to be in a realistic position to catch the ball.
Was his hand somewhere near the ball when he?
I think one hand at the very tip, one hand kind of maybe brushed the ball, but he with it totally outstretched and him right. He was not in a realistic position to catch the ball. In my opinion,
I just play the devil's advocate role here. There is a contest for a ball. They're in the air for a reason, aren't they?
One was in the air. Liebenberg wasn't in the air, and that's...
So Josh Bassett, just because he's mistimed it, doesn't mean he doesn't deserve the protection of the laws, I guess.
No, but Liebenberg actually wasn't contesting the ball. He knows that ball. He doesn't jump for it. He just kind of walks forward because it's gone miles over his head.
He's moving forward to get in the line of the ball, which is going over his head. He notices Josh Bassett and sort of shrinks up his arms into a little ball.
Maybe I've miswatched this then.
This, I guess, is my point. Liebenberg is not contesting the ball. Josh Bassett is not in a realistic position to contest the ball.
Mm.
So... I don't necessarily have a problem with it being a red card, but it does seem weird that element of the law is applied inconsistently to one player and not the other, that you must be in a realistic position to catch the ball.
And it's a little bit like when Carl Sinclair did that little jump into Luke Cowan-Dickie, and Luke Cowan-Dickie was on the bad side of the law because Carl Sinclair had chosen to jump in the air.
That's right.
And he jumped in the air before, which I can't remember which one it is. There's the one for the Lions where he jumps before he receives the ball.
Charlie Farmoina.
Farmoina and Sinclair, yeah. But yeah, it's do you jump before you receive the ball or after you receive the ball, and the laws apply totally differently.
Well, equally, what can a player do if someone decides to jump...
Onto your head.
Onto your head, or what can someone decide to do if they jump immediately before...
The one which I find bizarre... is when a player's going forward and he jumps for the ball and he's got the side of his hip, which is fairly bony.
Very bony.
And smashes in someone's head, and this guy's not left the ground, and that's the guy that gets in trouble.
Well, Hamro Liebenberg was on the deck for quite some time.
Yeah. He might be getting a ban and also might be out injured
a concussion for his efforts.
Yeah.
Now, in commentary, they said he wasn't in control. You could argue, exactly as Phil's saying, that the person who wasn't in control was Josh Bassett.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's a fair point. And I don't like this standard of not in control. We know we've had this conversation before. But the general argument is, if you're not in control, you're reckless because you're not in control. But there are... In almost every situation in rugby, there's going to be an element before you hit contact that you're not going to be in control. And it's just like, how much control of your body do you have, and when do you lose it, if that makes any sense? So I guess the best athletes have control of their body to a further extent than lesser athletes, so they can pull out with less time. Does that make sense at all?
It does, yeah.
Whereas lesser athletes can't do that. So here's a great example for you is the Kieran Brooks one. Kieran Brooks is as sign as he is because he's got a very specific job, and rugby is it's allegedly a job, a game for all shapes and sizes. Kieran Brooks can't change his level that quick. He's not designed to do so. And if he's not changing his level, he's got two options. Either he can't move out of the way because he's massive. So he's either going to...
And this is happening in fractions of seconds.
His arm raising, and then therefore hence a swinging arm, or someone's going to run into his shoulder head first. Those are his two options. Kieran Brooks cannot get lower.
So I would say in this, he probably can't get lower because Lavanini's height changes so quickly, he needs his arm to be in a better position.
Well,
has to be in a better position. But also the World Rugby laws, they do mitigate for that because of the sudden change in height.
And also I think that it's almost a price worth paying for clarity, right? So there are situations where... So I have been in a situation where I high-shotted a guy at Gorstang, and I didn't know where he came from. He just appeared around a bunch of bodies. I don't have enough time to adjust my height, and I hit him fairly high. I didn't mean to. It's just the way...
Yeah.
Just it happens.
Well,
right?
You're fortunate that intention doesn't come into it.
Yes. Because I'm relatively well-known in rugby circles, I got away with it. And that guy and that guy had to quit rugby. No, that's a complete lie. that bit didn't happen. But I know there's nothing that I could do about it. But actually, that trade-off for certainty in the laws might actually be worth it, because we can look at it and go, yeah, that's a red card. There's no ambiguity around it.
And that's a point that we've been making for quite a while, and really highlighting the inconsistent approach where you, at times, the law and the framework has been applied really consistently, or certainly it's been applied correctly, but then you see five shots that don't get looked at, don't get a second look at, are ignored. And that's frustrating with me. And so, to a degree, certainly those three reds all being given as reds, it actually makes me quite comfortable that the laws are being applied consistently, certainly. And I want that. I definitely want consistency.
But because a lot of incidents go unchecked and unpoliced and refereed in that sense, that there you may find there is an incentive to, if you just get a little shot that you think might be high, make sure you fall backwards, make sure you make a little bit of a meal of it.
There we go.
I mean, that might be a coaching point, and I don't want that to ever be something which comes into rugby.
This is 100% correct.
I think it will be the case.
Yeah, and it should be, really, because incentives matter, don't they?
Yeah,
it's a professional sport, and that's what... You know, if they're not diving on the floor and you're 3 points down, I might want to get rid of that player, to be frank, because that might be the end of my job too.
Mm.
You know, all these things stick together.
Oh, I can't get on board with that.
But these are realities, though. But then, aren't they?
If you don't give the opposition player an opportunity to dive, then he can't dive.
Yeah.
So it's again, control the controllables.
Oh, I think it's a slippery slope when you start going down this. I know it's a moral quandary, but it's a slippery slope. And maybe it's old fashioned to think that rugby's not a place where we entertain that, but I don't think it should be. However professional, and whatever the stakes, when you start going down that road, it doesn't end. So the values which we cherish will just continue to unpick themselves.
So I have some thoughts on this, which will not be popular. But there needs to be a clear separation between how we ref the game in open play and the standards that we use in refing it compared to what we do in the tight game. So if I'm going to tackle Phil, I think the high tackle framework has actually worked really well. Despite how cynical I was about it, it has done exactly what it's intended to do, which is change, for the most part, a lot of behaviours. And if you get caught high tackling someone, that is largely your fault. There's no real workplace to hide now. We've had it for 4 years. It's fine. We can't say the same for the ruck, because the ruck is so much more dynamic, and there's little details in it which I really struggle with.
Moving parts, tiny targets, constantly changing.
Yeah. I mean, Jack Willis gets injured, oh, we need to change that.
And there's hundreds of them every game.
Hundreds, yeah, there's hundreds. They're more frequent. With the tackle, we're encouraging the tackler to go lower. But would we encourage the tackler to go lower if the natural carry height was lower? Well, no, that wouldn't make any sense, would it?
Yeah, and that is the case when you're getting pick and go.
Yeah.
You're getting the picker of the ball, the attacker, is always going to be going low because he's picking and going. Therefore, perhaps the safest thing in that scenario is the tackler more upright.
Yeah, to kind of go over the body.
That is a far less effective tackle as well.
Well, quite often what you do, you're the tackler, you're upright, and you actually just push him to deck and go for the jackal straight away.
Well, that's what you'd hope to do, but it's really hard.
It's really
hard. But if you're Dan Lydiot, you're not doing that.
No. Yeah.
You're going with...
Or Luke Cavendicchi, you're going at their ankles.
Yeah, with whatever part of body you can try and wrap, but so good luck.
I wonder if we categorise the play in different types. So you've got, I guess, open play and tight play. And in the same way that we ask the questions with the high tackle framework, we've got to do the same with the ruck, and they've got to be a completely different set of standards and a completely different set of questions. I don't know what those questions are, and those standards have to be of a lesser standard than how we
deal with open play. Because open play, it's quite easy, actually. You know, you don't touch guys in the air, that's easy. You don't, you adjust your height low, that's easy. It's not easy with the ruck.
Yeah, no chicken wings.
So I don't know what the standards are, but they need to change.
In terms of behaviours, one thing just occurred to me as you were talking about that open play and thinking about wingers and stuff. I can't remember the last time we saw a clothesline type hit.
No, sadly not.
We've seen a few...
I mean, no.
We've seen a few seatbelt tackles as someone's coming across.
I don't like that they're penalised and yellow carded as much as they are. Yeah. They're of no danger.
We could probably bring those back now. I think now the behaviour's changed enough, we can bring them back. Now, just another thing. It's occurred to me that if you are in the we must change the behaviour crew, you're basically in the same gang as the game's gone soft crew. It's just a different wing of the same stupid club.
Different side of the same coin.
It is. It's exactly the same thing. We need to change behaviours. I don't think you're understanding it. So when you're looking at rucks in particular, they're not understanding it. They're not understanding what complexities go into it. And I think as well, the laws have taken us as far as we can go in changing behaviour. I think the behaviour has changed. And what we're seeing is like the baseline of errors. I don't think we're seeing anything more than that now.
So I disagree with the comparison between the change of the behaviours and the game's gone soft brigade.
Well, they're easy answers to complex questions.
But changing behaviour. So game's gone soft, I kind of hate the yeah. I hate the anyone who says that, and I also hate the implication that loads of people are saying it.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because I think both are false.
Yeah.
I think both are incorrect.
Whereas I don't think anyone says it. I've never met a real person that says it.
Someone actually said it in a WhatsApp group that all three of us are in this weekend.
Yeah, but wasn't that as a joke?
That was sarcastic. I'm pretty sure that was sarcastic.
I don't think it was.
Look, that's basically a fan group for the podcast. There's no way.
I read that as sarcastic because I hear it so infrequently.
No, I genuinely don't think that was. I think that was really...
Well, we text him
He was genuinely angry about... I'm fairly certain he hadn't listened to last week's podcast. So it does exist, but not it's not frequent. But the change behaviours, in my mind, it's the right thing to do. And the example of the taking men out in the air, we've actually seen in the last 7 years since that Jarrod Payne incident, there have been some real intelligent behaviours change. And actually, it is far better. The amount of... Every time I see a box kick, defender takes the ball, one player takes the ball, the guy coming forward could potentially compete in the air, but just takes a yard off, lets the defender's feet hit the ground and then nails him. Every time I'm like, that is awesome. That is better coaching every time I see that.
I agree with everything you just said. But then I also still maintain that I'm right, which is the laws have taken us as far as we can down that behaviour.
So what we're seeing is it is just the natural order of things when you have a fast-moving, dynamic game.
Yeah. So the arguments I hate the most are there's two which have come up this weekend. Players don't get it. Well, allegedly it's player-led, so the players must get it.
I would disagree. I would disagree with that.
It's such a trendy thing to say. You just don't get it. No, they do get it. It's player-led. It's there to protect them. It's not there to protect you on Twitter. Yeah. So they undoubtedly get it because it affects them.
I've not been on Twitter this week, and it's been so bloody lovely.
Yeah. Do you know what?
Just stay away.
My Twitter feed is a delight now.
You muted a load of words and stuff.
Yeah, I muted a load of words. And I've got rid of 400 people all in the sphere of politics. And it's just rugby. And I don't mind having good-hearted rugby debates, even though I don't like the arguments. You'll get actually loads from it. And one of them is the players don't get it. This is from the press. The players are not taking it seriously. You have the players that are taking it seriously. And these red cards are literally just the residue of things which players are getting wrong. They are just natural mistakes. They're not behavioural things. They're not going out there to injure people. If Mike Williams had his time again, he would have gone lower. He
would have gone lower and tried to rap.
Yeah, of course he would.
Because those are... I think these are residual things, is right. This is almost like a hangover of when you could do that kind of stuff. Which historically... Because the laws haven't changed. There's just the framework to apply it correctly, and they are being applied more consistently now. But 30 years ago, you couldn't go in and not bind... chicken wing, not bind and hit someone in the head in a tackle or a ruck. It's just being applied correctly now.
There is another amazing line of thinking, and I just can't get over this one. The referees have started to take it seriously. There's five red cards, referees have taken it seriously. Anyone who says that has no idea how good the referees are in the Premiership. I honestly think I watched the Bath Gloucester game with my younger brother on Friday night. And he was saying, oh my God, the refereeing here is so much better than football. And he's watching the Bath. He was watching the Bath red card, or one of the Bath red cards. And his point was that the referee has explained everything in detail. All his decision-making, the decision tree is there for everyone to see. And it's really good. These guys are at the top of their game. They really are brilliant officials.
Yeah, they're incredibly professional. And in Premiership, which is the league I watch the most, it's not just the referee. The two assistant referees and the TMO are all very good at communicating, right on top of their game.
Yeah.
Really, really professional.
Compared to the TMO situation, which is not as ideal, and we do not love it in any way. We don't think it's perfect. It's so much better than VAR.
Oh, VAR is an absolute joke. And I don't watch a huge amount of football, but just the sheer number of awful, awful decisions where seemingly every single person knows it is wrong, and it's still making that decision over and over and over and over again. It's crazy.
Yeah, it is nonsense.
What were the other red cards, briefly? I can't remember.
The other one was the
Val Rapava Ruskin.
I had little sympathy for him
elbow.
As well.
I see. I have less sympathy because
that is a hangover of that's just an it's a natural thing to do to protect yourself. And had he just, I think, in fact, it might have been Austin Healey said this today, which is exactly what I remember thinking at the time, is if he had his hand the other way around, so he
was
doing a hand
off.
If
he gets hand first,
palm
it's
first,
absolutely
not
fine.
Fist first, he's fine.
Well, it's the elbow, it's the forearm elbow.
But do you know what I saw on this? What happened to tackle height in that?
That's a really good point.
Tackle height is not in the law. That's a recommendation, but that is not part of the law.
If you're standing upright, and the guy comes at you. Yes, he has not exactly acted legally, but the guy's upright.
It's not illegal to tackle upright.
One of the ways around this, I watched it. I thought one of the ways around this might be to carry the ball like an NFL running back in two hands across the front of your body, and you almost use your ball and your arms as a bumper.
Yeah,
your sacrifice.
On the occasions when you know I'm taking it into
you're
contact.
Going in the tight. A pick and go. You're never offloading out of a pick
wrap
and go.
Wrap it in front of you, because then you can push with your arms and bump as long as you've got the ball in in your rib cage.
I didn't like that for Vavra Ruskin. I just didn't. I think
I've got no problem with that one, because I remember again being caught. Playing
should have gone lower.
You should have gone lower. Yeah, then
you're lower.
Then won't get you in the head.
What a great incentive, right? Yeah. That will change behaviours. That will change behaviours.
Have you seen Val Rapava Ruskin's legs? I don't want to tackle those.
That will change behaviours.
I remember getting caught with a leading elbow like that. Probably, tackling too high, but caught right in my throat.
I had that.
And
in
I was like, I wanted to shout, "Say elbow me in the throat!" I couldn't say it. I was like,
"Yeah." Now I think where people have real problems with the laws are when these things are not picked up whatsoever. When they're picked up, I think they're dealt with actually really professionally.
Yeah.
When they're not picked up, we get frustrated. But then you can't pick up everything.
No,
that's what I'd say.
And I'll say, I said it before, but the Carl Dixon handling of the Sam Bedloe tip tackle, I thought was excellent. I thought really well done, and I thought the right result. And I don't know if you saw, there was a Dave Ewers challenge.
Yeah. Penalty only.
Yeah, penalty only. It was a no arm.
Double hit.
Yeah, double hit. He went with no arms, but hits the chest of the player, and there's no contact with the head. It's a penalty only. Again, I handled really, really well.
Yeah, it's an interesting subject. Now, there is one other element of this which has to be addressed, because I think this is fascinating, and it is the Dan Dupree one, okay? The yellow card.
Jean-Luc
Dupree, sorry. All the Duprees merge into one.
Is that why you had Cornell Dupree in your fantasy rugby team last weekend?
Yes, it might be.
It's a ruck inside Quinn's own 22. Jean-Luc Dupree's trying to put some pressure on the scrum half pass by boshing the guy who's over the ball, Alex Bombrandt.
Hits his shoulder. The ref says he rises up.
Yeah.
And then Bombrandt is on the floor holding his head. And he's holding the wrong side of his head.
Mm.
Did you see that? So what's your initial thought about him holding the wrong side of his head?
So I thought he made a meal of it. He did go quite clearly, like, hands up,
this would
mouth
be one
open.
Of those, this would be one of those coaching points. Is there an incentive to try and buy a yellow or red card? I don't think that's what Alex Donbrandt did.
No. Can I tell you exactly what did happen?
Go on.
So Dupree comes in and hits him legally. I'm certain of that.
But Don Brantley's on the floor holding his head. So I thought, wow, he's done him. He's done him. He's held his head. And now the referee's like, oh my God, I can't not review this. There's a player on the floor holding his head. So the play, so the referee goes upstairs and he looks at the challenge, and what he can see is Dan Dupree coming in.
Jean-Luc
Dupree. And they're confused. They are confused. You can hear him like, well, it kind of hits the shoulder. Yes, it's very close to the head, but it hits the shoulder. Does it rise up? All right, they're not getting him for rising up. Surely not. He's made initial contact, and that's what's happened. And it freezes, so you don't know any more information. Watch the whole thing again. Jean-Luc Dupree comes in, drives. Don Brandt rises up, and his head connects with Danny Kerr's head. And that's why he holds his head and falls back. Not because he's been hit by Jean-Luc Dupree, because he's hit Danny Kerr's head.
So I don't think you see that from the first angle, probably.
You don't see it from any angle, because they freeze it.
But when
you see it in real life, you can see his head come up. And that's why he's holding the wrong side of his head, because that's where he's made contact with Danny Kerr.
Mm.
It's not even a card.
What one coaching point I would say on those, and it was a little bit like Jasper Visa, it's almost like, just let that rock go.
Yeah.
The rock's gone.
And the problem with it is, they've now got to make a decision, haven't they? Oh, God, okay. Well, he was illegal because he's come off his feet. Jean-Luc Dupree is probably coming off his feet in 90% of rocks, because it's probably the most effective way to rock.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that is reckless, and you're just risking penalties and yellow cards.
That yellow card, it's not. It's just, I just don't see the potential value you're getting out of hitting Don Brandt to make Danny Kerr's pass when you've pinned Quinns in their own 22 versus just...
Well, the risk of giving a penalty away.
What's the point?
The interesting part here is, if you hold your head, you're going to get a review. And if you come off your feet, you can stop the attack, you can stop the pressure, you can do all sorts of naughty things. Now, Don Brandt is actually completely innocent in all this, but in real life, in the replays, he looks guilty. He actually did get hit in the head.
Mm. So he should have had a HAA.
I guess,
holding your head, you always have a HAA, right?
I think so. Well, that's maybe one thing to
don't touch your head.
Disincentivize it. Is if you go down holding your head like you've been shot, you've got to go for a HAA. Mm.
Yes.
That's one thing you've got to do.
There you go. That would solve
the opposition doctor.
Buy it
with the French doctors.
I like that. Yeah. I like that. So one more refereeing-based decision to talk about, and it's also the end of the Exeter Northampton Saints game.
Yes,
which is a fascinating little situation.
So I have a top tip for this. I always watch the quad, because the quad twitches. Quads never lie.
I mean, I always watch the quads anyway.
Yeah, of course.
I'm always looking at the quads.
Absolutely. Never seen anyone being able to judge it off shoulders. But if he's tense his quad, you can go.
Well, so, just to reiterate, in case you didn't see it, the last minute of Exeter's game, they score a try, which brings them 1 point behind Northampton. A touchline conversion opportunity by Joe Simmons, who lines up a kick. Then Northampton start running to charge down the kick. Get to the ball before Joe Simmons kicks it. Convinced he's moved, referee Christoph Ridley agrees that Joe Simmons had moved. Joe Simmons is like, what? Well, I think you can see this both ways.
Mm. And there's not... I've watched all the game tape we've got, and I'm still not 100% certain. I probably give the referee and Northampton the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
That I think he does move. I think there's a clear stop. He shimmies his shoulders, but then there's a foot move, and then he stops again, and then he starts moving. Yeah. But by that time, Northampton...
Was it Johnny Wilkinson who used to do the little shuffling on his feet like he's a seagull trying to get worms up out
of
the ground?
It might well be, and if that is the case, more people should have charged him down.
Yeah, or you bake that into your routine so that you've got, like... Basically, if you're doing that up until the point you move, it's harder to judge. Because the law is when you start your approach... for the conversion.
And I think World Rugby clarified this a few years ago and said that the approach is the point at which you move towards the ball. No. They actually clarified that, because they said they didn't want referees to have to decide when a forward motion was done. It was after you pause in your set, when you initiate movement, World Rugby clarified this, that's when you begin your approach.
Okay.
So in this case, I agree with you. I would give Northampton the benefit of the doubt. The one interesting part is you can clearly hear Northampton players shouting before they get to the ball, he's moved! He's moved! And one of the laws is you're not allowed to shout.
Yes.
So equally, I think the referee would have been justified to go, that was fair enough, guys, but you shouted, so back you go.
Yeah. What about the shot? I mean, I would feel, if I was a Northampton fan, I'd feel particularly hard done by, yeah, because they only shouted because Joe Simmons is like,
what?
I've not moved.
Yeah.
Which is, ironically, he has now moved.
Which, yeah.
But out of all of this, the one thing I will say is I love Exeter as a club so much. There is so much to love, and the end of this game is what is just a prime example of why it is such a special club, because Joe Simmons didn't complain, shook Northampton's hand. He was clearly disappointed, but the first thing he did was didn't he just kept it to himself, and he went and he shook every Northampton player's hand. Rob Baxter afterwards said, "No, we had 78 minutes where we were substandard. We should have won that ourselves. And we're not going to blame the referee. And you know what? I've had a look at the video, and fair enough, he's entitled to interpret it that way." So absolute class from Rob Baxter. Absolute class from their captain, Joe Simmons. And I just think it highlights what a great club they are. And going back to, you know, let's not unpick the things we love about rugby. Exeter are everything. They're a club that will be the last to go on, just have a little dive, lads.
I don't know. Well, it's easy to do that when you've got a job for life, isn't it? It's not so easy when...
Chicken and egg.
You know, you're on the hot seat.
Is he as successful as he is because he's built... Because
he's part of the furniture.
Because he's built that way.
I don't know.
Because that's the mindset he has.
Look, if it's my job on the line, you're diving.
The GB School of Management.
You've got to go down. You've got to go down. There's no options for you.
And in that game, there was only one card. It was a yellow card, and it was for a Northampton player.
Yeah,
It was Furbank got a yellow. So it's another one where cards have less of an impact on the game as they at one time did. Because I remember being told. And this might have been a rugby league hangover or something like that, but the old Mantry always used to be two scores.
Yeah, Wales were that.
You can see the yellow card, you should be two scores ahead at that. And it happened in the Bristol-London-Irish game.
Yellow card, two scores for the team with 14.
Yeah.
There are strategies, I guess, to deal with it more, which there needs to be. But yeah.
So teams are much better now at dealing with
it. Well, just on that, like Northampton are in third. I mean,
Are they not in fourth? Or fifth?
I think they're in third.
I think you'll find Harlequins are in third and Sale are in fourth.
Let's have a quick look. Northampton, Harlequins are in third. Northampton are in fourth.
When did that happen?
Sale are in fifth. Sale 28 points. Northampton 30.
Admittedly, Northampton have picked up some. Northampton have picked up some COVID points, but nonetheless, that was a fine win going down to Sandy Park. First time in 7 years that they've won there.
First time anyone's won there in 7 years, probably. What a weird season, hey.
Yeah,
because Northampton were buried and gone, weren't they, at a certain point?
Basically, right up until the point when Poison Chalice Chris Boyd signed a new extended contract, they were dead in the water. Soon as he signed that contract, we were all saying, lots of people were saying, that's mental, he's doing a terrible job. And they've been really impressive since that point.
Now,
they've
been impressive once, I'd say. So I don't think they were impressive in their win against Gloucester. And I don't think... They're still a little bit flawed for my liking. They still got the back too much. I didn't see the Exeter game, so I can't talk about that.
Well, they were tough.
Yeah. They scored a pushover try against Exeter.
I heard they won scrums and stuff like that.
Yeah, they won scrums.
They're winning the tight battle against Exeter.
Yeah, I mean, that is a...
To paint that compared to what we were talking about 6 months ago for Northampton.
180 change.
That's amazing, isn't it? Yeah. Maybe styles make matchups or something.
I was just about to say it's a 360 change, but that people say that a lot, don't they? But that actually means...
it means back to where you started from.
It's a 180 change.
Yeah, no, it is.
It's about to.
Makes a massive difference. They've got a bit of real toughness about them, and Sean Adendorf, as an example, has added a bit there. Nick Ezekwe has been great.
Yeah.
So yeah, they're not going to be challenging for the title this season, but they're...
Well, they literally are.
Well, no, they won't.
Well, they'll be competing for top four, but I think the title will be a step too far.
But if they're in top four, you're in contention, aren't you?
But they're a nuggety team, and they've made some big strides, and so fair play for that.
Yes.
Bath won another game. Do you notice that?
Yeah,
they did. Less impressive than the win last week.
It was a tough game. I thought that Gloucester had a lot to say for themselves. I don't know where I stand on Bath, because I don't think Sale really stood up well against them, although Bath came out fighting. Oh, Josh Bayliss has been called up by Scotland.
He has,
so
yeah.
People are listening.
Yeah.
Not the RFU selectors.
No.
I think he's going to be an absolute weapon for someone at six. Not a second row. He's not 6'4" second rows.
Yeah.
Two a penny.
Or 6'3", 106 kilos.
Yeah,
wired.
Not something.
That's not a second row.
But as a back row, I think there's some promise there.
He's a good player.
Good player, good premiership player.
He's a great player.
No, mate, I've been talking up Josh Bayliss before you, buddy.
You didn't even know his name before I mentioned him.
Mate.
He's more my friend than yours.
Tim was working the 2017 England under-20s when he was performing.
I never remember you mentioned Josh Bayliss. I'm just saying. Don't remember that.
Alongside Stockers, Geordie Barrett.
For England?
Porter. All of those.
Before the first lockdown, I did a little sit-down interview with him at Sandy Park during a game. And I think I said on the podcast, like, it's a good-looking rooster and a really nice bloke.
He is handsome as well.
He's bloody good. Hard worker. Rapid. Plays all back five positions. And Miles Reed seems to be doing a lot more good things. He's very busy.
Yeah.
This reminds me a little bit of when Wales were terrible. And they were terrible with, like, second-choice players. And they slowly got better and better and better. And when all the first choice got back in, they then had a real nice complement of players to build into their squad. And I think people like Miles Reed and Josh Bayliss and who's your winger on the Will Muir.
He looks quality, Will Muir.
Yeah, maybe.
Rangy, he's like McConaughey 2.0.
Yes, he is. He is.
That rangy running style.
Now, maybe I don't know. I'm not willing to give Stuart Hooper the benefit of the doubt just yet.
No.
If there were real issues at the core of that club, that was the sort of game they would have lost.
Or is it the sort of game that Gloucester would have lost? That's more the point, isn't it? Mm.
It's a game. It's exactly the kind of game that Gloucester have been losing all season.
I mean, I just felt for them so much. They were... Chris Harris and Reece Zammit were absolutely dynamite, and they still couldn't win.
Yeah, those two are class,
aren't they?
But they're in that losing streak, aren't they?
Yeah.
They've got to do something special to break
out of it. No, they don't.
Oh, actually, yeah.
To break out of it, they've got to do something special, but they don't have to do anything special.
They don't have to do anything, yeah. Well, sell all the players.
They would be roughly the same points as Bath. If only they'd given up all their games to COVID. They would be two places better than they actually are. Poor old Gloucester. I don't know what to recommend to them other than just carry on chipping away. They are almost there.
It's probably a good point to mention that we've got another podcast coming in your feed this in probably tomorrow, depending on when you're listening to this. It'll be in your feed now. But we're going to be just throwing some ideas. If ring fencing is going to be permanent, which it may well end up being, then... I think we're all unanimously against that. However, there's only so long you can keep trying to swim against the tide. Actually, if you're going to swim with the tide, how could it work? We're going to try and solve that one.
Indeed.
Yes.
So a few things on Bath, which then proved to be not true. I did not think that... Oh, what's his name now? Mercer had a good game. And then all of a sudden people are like, he's absolutely class. I thought he looked like he'd already departed to France for most of this.
French conditioning.
Yeah.
He has put on some weight, not all of it good.
I agree. He's nowhere still, near as explosive as he was.
He still does some lovely things. He's still a very talented player, but yeah. It's interesting because he's gone to France because he's not on anywhere near England's radar. And I think it's probably right that he's not anywhere near England's radar.
I completely agreed. Last 6 months in particular, I do not think he's played nearly as well as he did when he first broke on the scene. When he first broke on the scene, I was talking at this guy as maybe the best player on the planet.
All action, like basketball-style hands, rangy runner,
feet,
power,
everything.
Footwork.
But he's definitely slowed down a bit.
Yeah.
Faletau looked class.
Faletau is playing his best rugby at the moment. This is the best... The last few games that I've seen of him, best he's played in a Bath shirt. Mm. And to think about what he's done, and obviously Faletau's not alone, Reece Zammit, Hogg, Sheedy, all played last weekend, battered and bruised, maybe less so Sheedy than Faletau.
Back row's particularly abrasive.
Yeah, Faletau in particular. And then to play this game on a Friday night as well for Faletau.
But also, I think this happened twice to Faletau now, that he's had no other place to go. i.e. they've either had red card or injuries, which means he's forced to stay on.
Yeah.
So he's had a real bad time of it, which may be what he needs, actually. He maybe just needs these forced minutes because he hasn't played much, and just a little bit of toughening up might do him well.
And it's potentially the Lions year. So yeah. if there's ever an incentive to get back to your best rugby, that
Lions
is it.
Year is a one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Just quickly talking about back row then, because, and you mentioned Zach Mercer is, you know, maybe a few places down the pecking order at England level, and I agree. George Martin, he's the man then in the England squad. Eddie Jones
next cab off the rank.
Next
clearly.
Cab off the rank.
Does anyone know anything about George Martin?
Yeah, I know he's like one of the guys Steve Borthwick brought in at the end of last season when they were playing all the kids.
I was surprised he didn't interview him straight after Josh Bayliss.
Tim's been talking about George Martin for
a long time.
And do you remember all the Game of Thrones podcasts back in 2014?
Him, Freddie Stewart and Van Portfleet, the scrum half, are the three youngsters they're most excited about.
I'd be excited about Van Portfleet.
He looks good.
I really like him, yeah.
Stewart's, I think, the pick of the three of them.
Stewart is class. I don't think he is. Oh, no, he is very good, actually.
He's good.
But I also think Van Portfleet is very good.
Freddie Stewart's got Matt Perry vibes at football, like the safest houses fullback.
Interesting. Do you know who I thought he kind of reminds me of? A developing Israel Folau.
Interesting.
He's so tall.
I'd go for that.
Yeah. I mean, you've got a long way.
That's amazing, in the air.
Yeah, that would be a long way to go.
But I can't think of anyone else who's 6'4" who plays fullback.
Folau's 6'5", isn't he?
No, I think Stewart's 6'5".
Oh, yeah. You're obviously missing the tallest ever international fullback.
Oh, Jordy Barrett?
No.
Matt Banahan?
No.
No.
Don't think he ever played international.
Canadian.
Yes. Went on to play. Mike Pike went on to play. Went off to play. On to play AFL. Aussie Rules.
Did he really?
Yeah. I do like Stewart. George Martin, I know very little other than...
He wrote Lord of the Rings.
Obviously wrote Lord of the Rings.
Wrote Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones, sorry.
Other than, he's a big boy, he's 19.
Tolkien's a quality player in the academy, yes, though, coming through.
Exactly.
He's 19 and six foot six and 18 and a half stone, which for 19 years old is fairly sizable.
It's quite large for 19, isn't it?
Yeah.
So there's a few things about Leicester. Let's talk about Leicester then. The good and the bad. So this feels a little bit like...
More good than bad in this match, though.
Well, this feels like the fruits of the ill... is it the fruits of the... No, the ill-gotten, whatever it is. The fruits of the poison tree or whatever the hell it is, right? Which is, to get these three youngsters, they had to throw an awful lot of them to the wolves at the end of last year. Like, many animals were hurt in the filming of this film.
I think, there was the game at Wasps, the reverse fixture at the end of last season, like in October time, where they got absolutely panned.
Yeah.
Like, embarrassingly panned.
So what you're saying, this is like when you go to a Russian circus...
Effectively.
And you see all of the incredible dancing bears and all the animals performing tricks.
Yeah,
you
had
what
to,
you don't see is behind the scenes.
The 600 bears they had to sacrifice to find those 30.
Exactly.
That's exactly what we're looking at, yeah. So to get here, there's been a price to pay and not all to management. But anyway, we are where we are. As for Leicester Tigers, this game was... patient, grinding, grueling, boring, pragmatic.
Borthwick-esque.
Territory-based. I loved every second of it, frankly. I thought it was absolutely awesome. And against Wasps, too, who come to Rugby Grounds to play really nice, attractive rugby with a hell of a talented team. And it wasn't enough. They didn't let them play at one point. It was 1% possession in Leicester's 22. I like that. That's old school. And the thing I like most about the Premiership is there are so many clubs with different identities, and when they embrace their identities, rather than go down this trendy way of playing rugby because everyone wants to see offloads, this is how it should be played.
So in other words, if Leicester could rewind and make different decisions, they might just go, well, okay, we're having a bumpy patch with Cockers, but we're sticking with him because this is the way to go.
Yeah.
This is Leicester. And the as great a coach as he is... I've forgotten his name.
Matt O'Connor.
No, who was the guy who came in alongside? Oh, Aaron Major is not the way.
No, it's not the way.
This is not the way.
Yeah, albeit if you can somehow combine the two of them and get the gnarly forward pack and the back singing, then that's not a bad thing. And maybe they had it all along in the Cockers Major. Maybe that was destined to be the perfect combo.
I pointed out on another platform, which is, what do Leicester want to be? And I don't think it's been entirely clear. Is it like a common room for Matt O'Connor's old mates? Is it a expansive team, as you know, you mentioned with Aaron Major, access of Kyle Eastman and George Ford and Manu Tuilagi and Johnny May, who are all great players, but they weren't doing the business that Leicester required them to do.
Well, can anyone tell me a team that's been really successful at any level that hasn't had a horrible, nasty pack and halfbacks that have an amazing kicking game?
No. No, I can't think of one.
Is that not, like, that's the bedrock of every great team?
Exactly right.
Yeah.
Exactly right. And
it's not rocket science. Yeah.
It's really not.
Wigglesworth is one of the best ever to play the game. People might not think that because it's not a particularly cool thing to say. He's got five titles. He didn't accidentally find them. He's a brilliant, brilliant player.
He even managed to win a title with Sale Sharks. That's how good he is.
Don't get it. We'll see. Don't get it.
Yeah, fair play.
Even with Sale Sharks.
It's nice to see a horrible Leicester pack just being meaty.
Now, I still don't like how it's put together. I still don't like the fact that the whole back row is South African. I mean,
don't like that.
You
don't like that.
Not for Leicester, what? No. different identities for different clubs.
They've tried alternatives. That South African beef is just...
Yeah, but they're not the good South
African beef.
Yeah, but it's not the good South African beef, is it? We've got other teams. Other teams have got the good ones. These are just pale impressions.
They're pretty handy.
They're not that handy.
The other Visa brother, Liebenberg and Brink.
Well,
millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Talking about an English back row player, Alex Donbrandt, Alex Donbrandt will have seen George Martin get called up to England. And, and him, well, he and Sam Simmons, but I'm going to mention Alex Donbrandt must be going, what have I got to do?
Yeah.
Well, he was Donbrandt in this game.
He was amazing.
He does Donbrandt things on Donbrandt time. Like, occasionally he just clicks into action and think, oh, wow. I think, although the running was done by somebody else, it was effectively his try, what he did to set it up.
Totally. Well, actually, there's another person I'd mention that was involved in both of those tries, Will Evans.
Yep.
Yep.
Was class. He jackaled the ball. Donbrandt.
Donbrandt
ran...
What?
I've just done God knows how many videos calling Will Evans Will Skinner.
Alex Donbrandt just does a Johnny May circa 2013-esque run across the pitch to find a space and give an offload back in. The guy is special, and I've said this a couple of weeks ago, I'm going to keep banging the Donbrandt drum. He has a rugby brain that at whatever level he's utilised, it will do special things because his brain operates in a way no other number 8 in England does.
Yeah, and I would agree with that. His lines, like his line for his try, the lazy line, because he knew he just has to run that lazy cross-field line to pick up, because Marcus Smith is going to break the line. He's got the time and the space. Marcus Smith will do it, and he picks it up 20 yards ahead of where Marcus Smith starts his run and scores. And the one that you described before, Tim, that the little step and then accelerate and then the offload to, I think it was Mike Brown coming through, who had a great game.
He's so good.
Wonderful.
He's so good. And Danny Kerr was awesome.
So I was thinking about this, like, Danny Kerr and Mike Brown fall into this category of players I've actually written off and said, no, need more, and it's time to go.
I never have, for the record, and the podcast will be testing to that.
I have. And
I have as well, and I've loved Mike Brown for a long period of time.
It was unfair, because perhaps you're thinking of them in England terms, and maybe the international scene has passed them by,
But in the club colours, they've been brilliant. They were brilliant.
I think you see, bearing in mind what we've been said about England, I see you see Mike Brown at the weekend, and you actually I don't agree. Just because he's the age he is arguably England's best fullback.
Well, I would say he is England's best fullback,
and Danny Kerr is arguably England's best nine as well.
But England maybe don't have an international class fullback at this time.
Well, yeah,
That would be the other thing. I don't think that Danny Kerr is the best nine. I think maybe he is.
He might be the best English nine.
He's not a million miles away, is he? Bearing in mind, Ben Youngs is the English nine. So he's better than Ben Youngs, but I would still say the backups are probably shading it. But there again, Eddie likes him more than he likes Ben Spencer, probably more than he likes...
Dan Robson.
Here's a question for you. Now that Gustard has left, obviously things have significantly improved for Quinns.
They really have.
Yeah. It's chalk and cheese.
What was he doing?
Well, here's my question. Was it the toxic culture that Gustard created within that squad that has now been lifted to allow them to flow free? Or was the professional do-gooder, improve-yourself culture that Gustard created stifling the toxic culture that the players wanted
there?
Or maybe, in terms of identity, what do you think of when you think of Quinns? You think of,
faded red trousers.
Laissez-faire, go for it, attack. Maybe they just needed the shackles off. Albeit, the biggest change in them, much like Leicester, is that they're hard.
Yeah. They do work hard, actually, don't they?
Their pack has been tough. And it's been a while since I've said that about Quinns' pack.
Yeah, quite right.
But it was, for the longest period of time, you had an international front row and nothing behind them, and they're just failing to perform.
Yeah, I like what they've done. Now, I don't recommend anyone fire a £300,000 DOR and replace him with X players. But in this case, it might have worked because what Quinns have understood is you can't just implant a culture from someone else who is actually your arch rival and just hope it works. And no amount of Wolves or Bears or attack helicopters could make Quinns players.
That might be it, because we know that. I know Saracens don't really think of Quinns as the big match, but Quinns definitely think of Saracens as their big derby rival match. And maybe they just felt they were getting the Saracens juice.
Yeah,
and they were like, "Well, no, we're not having this. We hate that.
Yeah, we hate you." That's basically it. I don't think it's necessarily anything wrong with Gustard. I think Gustard will go on to do great things. I hope he will, at least. But he just wasn't the right guy for Quinns, and Quinns made a massive mistake in not building on their foundations like Leicester are now, and instead trying to reinvent the wheel. The Quinns know what Quinns are. They wear faded trousers, they wear quartered shirts, they drive Maseratis.
Cliques.
I've driven into... I've mentioned this before.
In your Maserati?
I've driven into a few...
in your Maserati.
Premiership car parks. And it's more stark when you drive into Premiership car parks when there was no fans about. And driving into the Quinns car park when it was only the Quinns players there. Oh, my goodness.
Really?
The motors they've got. Yeah, seriously.
That's not good. As an IFA, I can tell them that's not good.
And it's not good as well because they'll be paying a significant premium for property down there as well.
They really need to get some advice, I'd recommend.
Anyone you know who could
I know a few people. That concerns me. That concerns me more. I'm not going to tell that story again. It concerns me.
Whatever Marcus Smith is driving, he's earning it as well.
So
again, is there... I would argue, at the moment, there is not a better 8... 9, 10, or 15 that's English.
Oh, I thought you were going to say something else.
On form, I probably...
Well, do you know who you missed out?
If you have the last four games.
Yeah.
You missed out the... And this is quite something for the Premiership. The guy who might be the best South African signing.
Oh, yeah, I said English.
Esterhazen.
My word, is a handful.
Yeah.
The best part about this game is Harlequins did not need Marcus Smith to play really well. In fact, he played pretty poorly, to be honest. His kicking was not quite where it should be. His passing was still good. His feet were still good, but they weren't at his top end. Esterhazen allows himself bad games because he gets him over the gain line and batters people. Mm. He was beating up other South Africans, which is impressive.
Did either of you see the game today?
Yeah. Awesome match.
I turned it off at half time. I thought this is over.
It was So it's interesting you say that, because I was a bit annoyed at half time because all of the plaudits from the commentary team were going to Bristol, and rightly so, because their tries were amazing, and arguably they could have been 38-3 up at half time had that disallowed try been given. But I felt it equally could have been take off the two interception tries, it could have been 17-13 at half time, and both those interceptions were with London Irish deep
on their own line, on Bristol's own line,
deep in Bristol's territory, with Bristol having a man in the bin. So, like, they were saying in comms that this game's over, Bristol. I mean, the finishing from Pietau and now Lauga was amazing. But I just felt it was a bit too one-sided. Mm. And I'm not saying I saw this, because I did not see this comeback coming. But I think London Irish were a bit harsh done by in that half-time assessment. And, I mean, it took them until the 60th minute to get firing. But from 60 minutes onwards, those three tries were absolute box office to set up that incredible finish. But they should have won the game. Tom
Parton, who was an absolute handful when he came on.
Part of the reason why they got there.
So fair enough, it wouldn't have happened without him. But nevertheless, it was... He had three people to pass to.
It was a 3-on-1, 20 yards. Four on one, 20 yards from Bristol's try line.
And he put the ball on the...
80 minutes on the clock.
And all of the passes were within... 5 to 10 meters.
Yeah, even the furthest pass was less than 10 meters away. Had two pop pass shots. It was too many options.
Instead of the simple pop, he went for the missed pass and just threw it on the deck.
Threw it to no one.
Yeah, they should have won.
They really should have won. It was a good performance by London Irish. London Irish missing a fair few of their... they had a few guys on the bench.
I was going to say, the one thing that was mentioned before the game was... Well, and I think Sarah even mentioned this to Pat Lamb. You know, when you look at London Irish's bench, does that... You know, they've got 300 caps worth of talent on their bench.
Yeah.
And maybe in hindsight, Pat Lamb thought, oh, he brought Pietau off. He brought some of his big guns off after about 50 minutes, thinking, well, that's job done.
Maybe. I mean, Rob Simmons, who adds 100 of those caps, he dropped out shortly before kickoff.
Oh, correct. Yeah,
so it wasn't as experienced, but you're still bringing Creevy and Sean O'Brien, who were both very good.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
Back in the day and for the last 20 minutes of this game.
They only need to be good for 20 minutes, don't they?
Yes.
You know, if they've got that class, they can do 20 minutes.
I mean, what I do like is this London Irish team. So they played, obviously... a younger, less experienced pack. But I do like some of the talent that they've brought through.
They're kids.
Brophy Clues, Ollie Hassel-Connellins, Loader, the tight end.
Loader's good, isn't he?
Loader's
Parton
very good.
And the guy who started at fullback.
Parton and Stokes.
Parton and Stokes.
I really like Goodridge Clark, the loose head prop, who's been playing well. Matt Rogerson, who's played a bit of second row. I don't think he's actually that young. I think he's late 20s, but he's
in the leadership group.
Experienced. Yeah, relatively inexperienced English guy. So, yeah, they're an interesting mix, the London Irish team, but they're doing something right. This game, were it 38-3 instead of 31-13 at half time, it really would have been done at that stage. Mm. But, they played well in that second half.
I watched a game this weekend, a different game.
Go on.
I watched Munster play Edinburgh.
Oh, Munster win.
I watched it for about 10 minutes.
Okay.
And I confirmed all of my existing prejudices about the Pro 14 and then I turned it off.
Perfect.
But I had to watch it because I wanted to bring my Pro 14 subscription cost down.
But have you only brought it down by one-tenth
of 80? Yeah, I couldn't do it for a whole night. I thought I had a weekend of rugby and nothing's going to be added here. Darcy went over for... Is it Darcy the scrum?
Casey,
thank you. That's how much I paid attention. Went over for a try. I thought, this is done. And then I turned it off.
Did you see my boy, Mike Lowry?
Mike Lowry? Who would he be playing for?
Ulster.
No, watch Munster.
No. It's going another try this weekend. Not in that game.
Oh, God, no. I'm not watching one of these
no
games.
No more. Not even the highlights.
Especially not the highlights.
If I just even though he's an established Ulster player now, if I was Mac Lowry's mum, I would still be just terrified to watch him play. He's so small.
He is tiny, isn't he?
He's fast. He's a good player.
He's a great player.
Very really good player.
Tell you what, they really do value people like... who's a Big 12? What's his name?
McCloskey.
If you're playing both Billy Burns and Mike Lowry in the same team...
Yeah, you need someone like Stockers. And Hume, the 13, is a young lad. Big, strong boy. Good turn of pace. He's got a great try in the Pro 14 final last year that we watched together.
Did we watch it?
Yeah. It was your one game last season.
Oh yeah, we did, didn't we? Yes, it's another great game in the Pro 14.
Exactly.
Yes. Have we done all the Premiership games?
I think we've done everything.
Okay, well, there's some other Pro 14 news.
Is there?
Allegedly, the Jaguares might be moving to San Sebastian to play in a competition named the Pro 16. Now, I don't know who the other team is going to be, but it seems...
Fijian Invitational team?
I was going to say, this makes sense, but they've sort of stolen the thunder of my idea to get a Fijian team based in Spain. But getting an Argentinian team based in Spain sounds pretty good as well.
That would be pretty cool.
Yes, it would be pretty cool, wouldn't it?
Makes sense.
I mean, it'd be very cool, actually.
Yeah, and as the only member of the podcast to have watched the Jaguares live, I would be a big fan. In South Africa, did you? Yeah, I watched them in Durban against the Sharks. It was a dreadful game. It was like 13-15.
Wonderful news.
In 35-degree heat.
With no one in the stadium?
There was maybe 4,000 people in a 50,000-seater stadium.
Oh, okay. So you can pick your seat, that's nice.
Yes, you can pick your banks and banks of seats. I will, of course, be the Saul Jaguares fan.
Mm. Oh, fantastic. I just remembered, I need to do something. Do you want to do the predictions for next week's games, then?
Just before we do, there's one thing. I'm surprised, JB, that you've not mentioned... I know you mentioned the Josh Bayliss call-up, but you've not mentioned how it proves you absolutely correct. Because last week you made a really good point about Scotland's ability to be aware of players.
Oh, yes.
And this is a great proof of that fact, because Bayliss, as far as I can tell, he was born and raised and schooled in the southwest of England. He played for England age grades, played Six Nations and Rugby World Cup for England under 20s, and... is obviously now played for England under 20s at a point in time when England under 20s was not the capture team,
yep.
Which is quite important, and has been snaffled up by Scotland.
I know. See, I told you, Tim, they're out there. I don't think I ever denied it.
I think both of us totally agreed with you on that point about the efficiency of some of the home nations.
We disagreed on whether Gary Graham had a good game against Wales, and he's been bombed from the squad.
He has.
Which.
They're out there and they're out to get you.
Mm. If you've got any Scottish heritage.
That's right. And this is exactly why these political call-ups exist.
No.
It is why they're there.
No.
That's the bit that I'm less certain.
That was where we disagreed.
Well, yes.
Well.
And this doesn't exactly prove your point on that.
Oh.
Because otherwise you would have been called up to the England squad before this ever happened.
I tell you what, you England fans need to be aware of another thing which happened this weekend. Did anyone see the Sale Sharks replacement scrum half?
Yeah, Rafi Quirk.
I did.
Yeah, ex Broughton Park.
Explosive little... Oh, there you go, Broughton Park lad.
Yep. Did all right, didn't he?
Explosive, yeah.
Mm. He looked quite handy.
Almost scored a try on day, but...
Yeah, and his passing is super crisp.
And a
hello as well to Matthew Donnelly, who is a strict neutral. sadly predicted the game wrong this weekend.
One of the things I have against Sale is, and it's not just Sale, it's any team that has a grey kit. I've mentioned this before. There is not a single grey kit that has ever looked good in the history of rugby. It's awful.
Great question. Mm. Is there a grey kit that's looked...
The only grey kit... So, there's the New Zealand Scotland grey kits that looked looked awful. That where there was
awful,
the kit
yeah.
clash,
yes,
where they were both. I think one was in like a bluey grey and one was in a grey.
And New Zealand wore that grey kit when they lost in 2007 to France.
Yeah, they did.
The Deuce Atoir game.
Good point. I'll always remember the grey Man United kit.
Oh, when they three-nil down at time.
Southampton
at half-time. They changed the kits.
In about 97 or something.
Yeah, I remember that.
So I think the reason a grey kit is not cool, or has never been called, because I can't think of a single team that has it as their home colours.
Mm.
I think if you had it as your home colour, it could be cool.
It's an awful... I mean, Sale have had some shocking away change kits recently, the bright yellow one and now the grey one. They need to sort it out. Why not dark blue for home, white for away. I don't get it.
Yeah, that's what it should be.
I should inquire, really. I mean, blue and white hoops would be great.
That red kit they had as a change kit was great.
I tell you one which is absolutely stunning was their European change kit in white. Did you see that last year or the year before?
With the red and blue trim.
Yeah.
The one with the red trim.
Really red trim, nice.
Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
That's the nicest kit they've had for some time. Sail kits are not renowned for being great.
No.
But they were cotton traders for years years and years, even into the professional
that's
era.
That's one of they won the league in a cotton traders kit, which is a real that takes the shine. That's why Wiggy's keeping on trying to get another one. Just because cotton traders just takes the shine off it.
That's an interesting thing you say there, because it was cotton traders, but it was actually like a shiny synthetic one as well. It wasn't the old heavy cotton shirt. It was a man-made synthetic thing. So it's the worst of both worlds, I guess.
I know. I quite liked it. I think. Did I like it? I can't remember what.
I just remember it being enormously baggy.
Yeah,
that was like 2 or 3 years after the England Nike kit.
There was a stage of rugby kits where we weren't quite sure what we should be playing in. Is it cotton or is it a synthetic fabric?
Yeah.
And some of these fabrics were utterly awful.
Well, the 2003 is the World Cup that really brought it to light, because you had obviously England in their Nike kit.
And France as well.
And France.
France had the same kit but in blue.
Yeah, there probably would have been maybe one or two others, but...
Yeah.
Maybe All Blacks was Adidas, but not quite as fitted, but still more professional. But then when you're playing against, like England playing against, I don't know, Samoa or South Africa, which was the proper old style. It could have been from the 1950s, the technology on that shirt. It just really highlights the differences.
Yeah. Yeah. There were some awful, awful examples. Awful. Do you know what I think? It was a high point of kit manufacturing. Were the Nike kits with the high collar. I know everyone hated them. I loved them.
Well, that was what England had when they won the World Cup, wasn't it?
England, France and South Africa had one. South Africa's was gorgeous. So was France's, actually, come to think of it.
When I look back at the video 2003, I don't like that England kit.
What? Why?
I mean, amazing memories. But as the kit, you're right, it was ahead of the game and it sort of was the blueprint for the future. But I don't love that kit.
Do you want to know my theory about the England?
The collar was too high.
South Africa was the same kit. It's that collar.
Yeah, the collar's too high.
Oh, I loved it. Absolutely loved it. Now, do you want to hear my theory about the England World Cup 2003 team?
Do I?
Is the theory they were all delighted that England didn't win last year, so they still got their after-dinner speaking gigs?
No, my theory is they don't remember the game. My theory is they've watched it so many times. Do you know, they always say that, well, the police do anyway, that memory is a really poor way to get your information.
Totally, yeah. There was that NBC newsreader who...
Brian Williams,
and he was...
He said he got shot down, but he didn't.
He said he was in a helicopter that got shot down, and he was in a helicopter behind one that got shot down. And it could, and some people have said it was stolen valor. Other people have tried to say, no, memory is dreadful, and you replay it over and over in your mind. Sometimes you can end up remembering it differently.
Well, yeah, if you think about these lads, for the last 20 years, they've done nothing but recount this story and rewatch the game. In fact, they're almost like in a prison of this thing.
Johnny Wilkins has never watched the game.
Has he not?
No, he's never watched it.
Wow, so he must have like original memories of the whole thing. So I wonder how many of them actually remember the game and their experience, and how many of them remember something completely different, which is the way they tell the story or the way that they've watched the game back in the past.
It's weird because sometimes you see a I think I remember things from when I was a kid, but actually probably it's just I've seen a picture since. And I've invented a memory of that moment.
Yeah. So anyway, that's my little theory on the World Cup. Yeah, don't hire them because they're lying to you.
Well, they don't remember it because they got so battered that night.
Yes, that as well.
Yeah.
Good old days.
Again, Johnny Wilkinson didn't drink that night because he wanted to remember what had happened. And he hasn't watched it since because he doesn't want to
write it down.
His memory.
Write it down. Draw a picture.
Draw a picture of how you felt. That, he probably would actually.
Write it down is my response to a mate of mine when he wanted to have a little. I can't remember what the quote was, but he wanted a quote as a tattoo.
Cop DM.
Just remember it. Just remember it instead. Yeah. Write it down.
Save the fish.
Seize the fish. or fish of the day.
Ha ha ha.
classics all around.
So we've got Six Nations next week. So we got that to look forward to as well. Who's playing who?
We're going to do Premiership first or Six Nations
first. Well, we don't know who's going to be in the Six Nations teams, do we? So, but on form, we can just quickly guess that England will beat Wales. Whoever is playing Ireland will beat them.
I hope England beat Wales.
And France probably won't win because they've got COVID.
They've got five players out with COVID, haven't they?
And good ones as well.
You're on for a Grand Slam, Jay.
Not concussion boys.
You can get a triple crown this week.
Dupont, Vincent, Marchant.
Who's on, what, France?
No, Wales are.
Oh, right, I follow France.
Triple crown this week.
Yeah, four out of the last five.
Yeah, you're right.
Four out of the last five times Wales have won.
Triple crown for Wales. Sorry, Phil.
Four out of the last five times that Wales have won their first two Six Nations games, they've won the Grand Slam.
This will be a travesty.
So the game's quickly. Italy host Ireland.
Ireland win comfortably. Good for them.
Ireland by 15 points.
At least.
Ireland, there's something about their attack that's not quite sharp enough. They've got enough to win this game. I think Ireland will score the better tries. Italy will score the better tries in that game.
Sexton will be back. Conor Murray will be back. Stockdale will not be back. James Ryan is in the squad.
Okay. Then Wales host England.
England.
Give me England, but I think if there was crowds in the stadium, I'd be saying give me Wales.
Yeah, I'm totally with you.
Or unless England get an early red card.
I'm saying England because of just blind loyalty. I'm not convinced. Wales look tough to beat.
I'm completely convinced that England will win this.
I'm not.
But you hate both England and Wales.
I don't hate either of them. Like them both equally.
Not at all.
No, I don't like them both. I slightly prefer Wales. If really push, maybe I prefer Wales. It's hard to say. Depends on what day you catch me.
You love slugging both of them off.
I like France. Certain. I like watching France.
Yeah, and then France on Sunday, 3 o'clock. France Scotland.
France win that one.
In France.
France. Slight favourites. Scotland need to bounce back, and they're pretty good. And Josh Bayliss will be playing. So, all in all, France, yeah. Still France, even without Dupont. Because he can't come back, can he?
No, Dupont will be out. So, March on
they've only got Baptiste Saran and Bezzi as and another one as backups.
Not good enough, is it?
And if they've got issues with those two, they can call up Maxime Machinot or Morgan Parra.
Morgan Parra, what, from 2019?
The 2013 Team of the Year.
Yeah. Surprised he's not playing for London Irish.
He should be. So that's those predictions.
Mm-hmm.
In the Prem.
Yeah, here we go.
Sale host Exeter.
So there was some conjecture going around that Sale might be resting some of their players ready for Exeter. As such, I'm going to pick... I don't know. I think Sale.
I think at home and in an international week, I think Sale will edge it. They did the last game at the AJ Bell between these two. Sale just edged
it. Did they?
I think they did.
I remember, I can't remember which stadium it was in, but I remember Exeter beating Sale last year after the restart.
Oh, maybe it was.
Exeter hammered them, actually.
Yeah, they scored a couple of lovely running tries.
It's not clicking for Exeter. It will, and I've got no doubt it will.
Not clicking for Sale, to be honest.
Yeah. No, that's true.
It's really not clicking. I don't know what it is, but there's something just not quite... They played better against Quins than they did against Bath, that's for sure, but they're still not quite there.
I was certain that Quins were going to get a bonus point try. After 38 minutes or whatever it was, that Quins had got the three tries, and Sale shut them down pretty effectively after that.
Yeah. I think Rafi Quek might get another look on the bench.
Mm.
I really do. I think Faf comes back and I think Quek sits on the bench.
Mm. I'm probably going to say Cheeves.
I'm going to go Sale.
Mm.
Saturday then, 1 o'clock, we've got Bristol Tigers.
Yeah.
Ooh, this is going to be a good game.
It should be a good game.
Clash of styles.
I mean, Tigers might have... a couple of massive South Africans either missing through injury or...
And they're missing George Martin now in the back row as well, unless he's getting released back to the club.
He won't be, because once he's in the bubble...
Well, no, but Harry Williams was playing for Exeter last week.
Was
after he wasn't in the match day squad. So
well, Randall's not come back. Doggers hasn't come back.
Yeah,
I'm not sure. Okay, yeah. He may or may not be playing.
You're going to have to really, no matter how well Leicester played this weekend, and no matter how much I enjoyed it, you've still got to give a massive advantage to Bristol because they are Bristol and they've got a body of work, and maybe Leicester revert back to the average.
But Bristol are missing a few players, both through internationals, albeit slightly fewer, but also through injury. Like arguably two of their best players in Nathan Hughes and Semi Randrandra are missing.
They're a great system team as well as an individual team, so I'm okay with them.
Okay,
I think Bristol will edge that one.
I think they will. A lot. But I think it'll be a lot closer than people might think.
So
Falcons might have a game this week.
Hopefully.
Against Harlequins.
Quins are going to make it 5 out of 5, although Newcastle have Gary Graham back with a point to prove.
That's true. Give me Harlequins all day long.
But the weather's warming up. Quins on a plastic pitch.
Quins five in a row.
Quins. Then Wasps, London Irish. Wasps.
I'm worried about Wasps at the moment.
Yeah.
They're on a real downward slope. The way they play requires a lot of confidence. You don't want to be trying to offload with your head down, metaphorically, do you?
And what I don't like about Wasps' team selection is they seem to be rotating their decision-making players.
No relegation now.
I guess you can, but you still got the
top four. You
don't build confidence by changing your decision-makers constantly. So having... It's been Gopeth is playing kind of 40-45 minutes, then Le Bourgeois comes in. Atkinson and Umaga seem to be totally interchangeable.
Vallecott was on the bench, or not even in the squad.
They like Wollstonecroft, though, don't they?
Then Vallecott was in this weekend.
Because Wollstonecroft's injured.
Oh, okay.
But just those decision makers. Then you have Sopawanga, who plays 15 and is a decision maker and kicker, but then drops out. And Minotsi, a totally different style of player, comes in.
I think their biggest problem, if you can call it a problem, is they've got so much talent, which is young and not developed at 10.
At 10.
Yeah, so Atkinson apparently... Well, not apparently. You can see it in real life.
He looks class.
Incredible talent.
Yeah.
Umang has already taken him to a Premiership final. So, which of those two do you go with? Now, it's very harsh, isn't it, for Umanga to supersede... what's his name?
Atkinson.
No, the other one. The other one who... Sopawanga.
Oh, yeah.
Only then to get removed himself by an even younger lad. So how do you mix... Because neither of those two lads look like a 12 to me. They don't look like they can shift out one. Mind you, no. Jimmy Gopeth never looked like that either.
No, but he is a... I know he's not a huge guy, but he's a bit broader.
Yeah.
And he's just a very experienced all-round player.
If you got two, you got none.
The fact that they're rotating them so much and you're losing that stability and consistency.
Wasps being Wasps, I am slightly surprised they haven't done something creative. I mean, Adogwu wasn't a 13. Sopawanga's not a 15. Gopeth's not a 12.
Gopeth can play anywhere.
Well, he didn't used to be able to play anywhere, but...
He
plays everywhere now. I'm amazed that they've not done... I mean, who knows what's going on there? They've got some very bright rugby people pulling the strings. Don't be surprised if they come up with a bit of a result, but I don't think it will be this weekend.
Do you think Wasps are going to lose to London Irish at home?
London Irish look good.
They did for the last 20 minutes. They controlled the game for large parts, but then couldn't get that clinical edge until the last 20 minutes. And part of that was Parton coming on and them actually having nothing to lose. Part of it was Bristol switching off.
Yeah. Ultimately, if World Team of the Year 2013 understand the very simple point that they are actually expected to play, then they're going to have to be good. They're going to have to be good because they've got so many big bruising guys to put on the field that eventually they're going to come good, surely.
To contrast with Wasps, and we keep saying it every week, they've got one of the best tens in the Prem.
They have actually. I mean, that's a legitimate thing, isn't it? They have one of the best tens around. So that helps a lot. Mind you, he was playing 15 to start the season.
Last season he was, yeah.
Yes, you're right, last season. Did he not, he's not played 10, 15 this season?
No.
No,
because Milo went to Ospreys.
Yeah, and Paddy Jackson wasn't playing particularly well when he took a while to settle in, which happens, but he's bossing it now.
Yeah, he's settled in.
So this is one of my major bugbears, this. 2-year deals. So I've never told you about this, Phil. Have I told you about this, yeah. Tim? It really irritates me. So teams put players on 2-year deals because they think they've been smart. Oh, look, we've got flexibility. Look, we can protect that cash flow. What really happens, even with the best players who are internationals like Paddy Jackson, you take your first year to settle in, no matter who you are, so you get overpaid. The second year, if you're any good, you will prove yourself, at which point the team either needs to let you go for a much bigger contract or sign you themselves for a much bigger contract. If they've just given you a 3-year deal, they'd have kept you for the extra year, and they could redo your deal in the middle of the second year anyway.
It's back to your age-old podcast with Ben Darwin, the contractual stability.
Contractual stability. It's
players are more valuable to the team they're in than the teams they go to, certainly for the first X number of games, X number of months.
And particularly if you do, like so many clubs do, if you do your due diligence and you're scouting and you're recruiting, you make all the phone calls about the character of a guy, what he's like, does he try and learn, is he developing, and will he fit into the system? If you do all of that stuff, which you should do before you sign a player anyway,
yeah,
then
you should back yourself,
to
trust a 3-plus-year deal.
Yeah, there are loads of players out there. If you think you're picking up the wrong one, he only deserves a 2-year deal, you've got the wrong guy.
Yeah.
So the irony of all this is it's the directors of rugby who are effectively telling these players, because they think they're smart and they're not, back yourself, go on, back yourself. And then they back themselves, and it costs them a fortune. And you've lost a player, which you then relied on. And you've got to start the 2-year process with somebody else. It's maddening. I kid you not, I could get top 4 in the Premiership just by signing the right deals.
It is a simple point. If you are only willing to give someone a 2-year deal, there might not be there might not be worth giving them any deal.
Move on.
Yeah.
Because if they prove you right in year two, they're going to cost you a fortune in year three.
It's going to be very
expensive.
The other games.
I'm going to say Wasps edge it.
Yeah, give me Wasps just. The other games. To wrap up this, what was supposed to be a very short podcast.
Oh, yeah.
We've got Gloucester hosting Worcester. Can Gloucester get a win?
Yes, they can.
I think they probably can. But I always like Worcester.
Willie Hines, his current club against his future club.
Wow, yeah. They're spending some fairly substantial money there.
Well, it'll be a lot cheaper, a bit cheaper than their current.
That's half. Yeah, probably better as well, to be fair.
They'd probably drive fewer Lamborghinis.
Huard is a magnificently talented player. Can't remember his last brilliant game for Worcester, can you?
No.
Can't even remember the last time he played for them, frankly.
he played a bit, but he's not been... I mean, he's a talented man, but...
I'll never understand what goes on at Worcester. They seem to have unlimited money for two players, and everyone else plays on minimum wage. I think this can't be the right way to build a squad, can it?
Especially if those two players are not playing for you.
Yeah.
See, Ben Teo.
Can we sign you for £1 million and the only thing in your contract is you must have complete disdain for the club?
Maybe that's what actually happened with England. Ollie Lawrence said, look, sorry, I'm one of the guys that's getting all the cash at Worcester. You've got to let me go.
Yeah, that's probably exactly what happened.
So we're going Gloucester, sneaking a home win.
Yes, Gloucester.
Yeah. And Northampton-Bath on Sunday, the final game.
That's a good game.
That should be interesting.
Mm. So now, Bath don't even have Josh Bayliss to rely on.
Or Mike Williams.
What else have they got?
They were auxiliary second rows as it was.
Yeah.
They were back rows playing in the second row to fill in.
Yeah.
And now they've lost the two back rows filling in the second row.
Yeah.
I reckon they go with Hooper and Blackadder.
Mercer and Faletau in
Falatau won't be there.
Lock.
Yeah, no Falatau
won't be there. Of course he won't be.
Rocco Degouni put his shoulder out as well in the game.
Well.
I mean, he's not going to be playing back row anytime soon, but he's not going to be playing.
Yeah. Good battle this.
Give me Saints.
Saints.
Yeah, I'll get on board with Saints, I think.
Yeah, Saints.
It's not immediately clear that that's a good choice, but who do they go for? Oh, Christ, do you hear about the drink driving charge?
Yes,
this week. Mike Williams. No, Stuke, sorry.
Stuke, yeah.
Yeah, that's why they're missing him.
Yeah, so I think... So Jonathan Joseph was on the bench this week.
He was. He got banned. You know, they stepped him down for a game, didn't they?
Yeah.
unlucky for Gabrielle Ogre and Jonathan Joseph to get dragged into all this. They had a little get-together, didn't they? And then because Stuke got done for drink driving, did he grasp up his mates or something? I don't know exactly how all
it
that
came
transpired.
To light. Where he'd been travelling from and to.
Yeah.
Well,
I would say I don't think it's grasping up. It's a police matter, isn't it?
What were you doing? I was breaking COVID laws with my friends. tough one. Young men, they do stupid things. They will learn.
Correct. So there we go. That's this podcast. Another one coming in your feed. So hit subscribe. Thank you for supporting us on patreon.com/eggchasers. Thank you for following at Rugby Podcast on Twitter, at JB and more at Cocker. And we'll see you on the next one. Let the boys play.
Let the boys play.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.